In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we're live. The Energemetra 6 podcast, episode 3. Welcome, Mel. Welcome, everyone in the audience. And welcome to my oldest, who is again reading John Cassisia. And thanks for being here, everybody. Real quick, before we get started, I do want to play that little word on how we do our value for value model here. So let's do that real quick. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value for value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. And with that out of the way, let's dive right in. Bright Star, Chapter 2. Darkness before you and chaos behind you. In hubris and weakness, the bright star will blind you. The first prophecy of the bright star, given by Seaver, Wild Man Ratting. Dragging the blanket Kievan had brought him, Nate was led to his cabin. Every room with an open hatch he was able to see as they traversed the ship was roughly the same size. They were cramped by most standards, but roomy, he presumed, for a space vessel. Alone again, Nate changed into a gi that resembled John and Rachel's. The same trousers, shirt, and cloth belt had been laid out for him when he arrived. Other than the persistent mental sensation of unreality, Nate felt like he was functioning normally, all things considered. However, he wasn't sure why, but he felt as if someone were staring at him from behind. When he looked around, though, he wasn't able to see anyone or any kind of obvious surveillance device. His cabin was mostly white, with gray trimmings and the occasional piece of black furniture to draw the eye. One large black frame contained a complex symbol, rendered into fine, eye-catching artwork. The yellow tint of the light that filled the room from glowing panels on every surface was bright enough to provide clear illumination while still leaving the white walls feeling dingy. The floor was covered in tight gray carpeting that muffled his footsteps. The room's most notable feature was its portholes, framed in black, complete with screens that showed star motion at a resolution he could hardly tell from reality. Nate wouldn't even have known the portholes were anything other than what they appeared to be, if not for the fact that one of them was on the wall beside his door, looking into what should have been the corridor outside his room. The pinpricks of stars burned impossibly bright on the porthole screens. He'd been outside with nothing between himself and the void but the thin walls of a crystal, but he now saw the universe outside as the sharpest, clearest lights he could imagine, rather than the hazy awareness of distant fire from his scant memories in the crystal. He assumed Ocarist was moving as the view outside indicated, though the subjective feelings of motion and the ambient sound of the vessel were unchanged as far as he could tell. Staring at that view, a sense of awe prickled up his spine. It was raw and real, and felt completely unfamiliar and strange. Every one of his memories was still so fragmented and confused he could make no sense of them. All he could pull to the front of his mind were flashes of images, which lasted only a moment, then faded away, leaving nothing behind. Nothing remained to him from before the emptiness in the crystal prison. After he dressed himself, he lay on the bed, scouring his consciousness for clues about who he might be, or what had happened to him. Loredan's quizzing and obvious arrogance had left Nate with a feeling of foreboding, but he didn't know why. Finally, in disgust and frustration, Nate spoke aloud, a throwaway epithet he forgot instantly at the sheer wonder of being able to speak so easily. But why? Why was it so strange that he could speak? Couldn't everyone? Then, in a flash so quick he lost it almost before it began, he saw everything that had happened to him at once. Nate's thoughts became a grand pattern, a tracery of connections so complex and breathtaking there was no way to express it in mere words. He saw himself and the universe he was now in with the same clarity as an astronaut, looking down at a world from space. The details weren't clear. This was a 500,000-foot view, nor was it a map. It was more like a complete grasp of all the events and connections that must come about as a result of his presence here, all at once. The road that lay before him would be difficult. He had been transformed, and he had a monumental task that was his alone to complete. It was energizing and terrifying, heartening and mind-boggling. Whether it was new knowledge given to him by a source outside himself or coming from his innate understanding of patterns, he couldn't have said. But he knew the role he must play in this universe. Then more came. He began to remember home, father, his life before. Then Adrian, the pain, sitting, cradling his head in his hands. Darkness filled him. It was overwhelming. Too much. He turned away, aghast. Then it was all gone, leaving nothing more than a fading afterimage. The sense of awe lingered, but so did the darkness that had nearly consumed him, along with a slight headache. And far off, on the edge of his perception, was the strange sensation of someone watching him, which may or may not have been connected. A raucous chiming interrupted his thoughts. He looked up as his door opened and John Kazizia poked his head through, one hand still on the hatch.
You busy?
Hardly. Nate sent him a quick, welcoming smile.
Could we come in?
John started to step through the doorway, even before Nate completed his nod of agreement. Rachel followed close behind, glancing curiously around. Her eyes lingered on a few of the furnishings, gaze sharp, and Nate got the sense that she was looking for hidden cameras just as he had. She smiled a greeting, her eyes still roaming over the room. Once the door was shut behind them, Rachel's lip curled. She jerked her thumb back over her shoulder.
They're listening, you know. Pretty sure somebody's got an air tap on this room with E6, and there are at least two electronic bugs.
John gave her a sideways look.
Sure you're not just nervous, Rach? I thought that you'd be used to the Watcher by now.
Rachel snorted.
Oh, I know that feeling. There's more going on here than just the Watcher, as if it wasn't bad enough.
Is that what I've been feeling? The Watcher? What's the Watcher? Nate looked around himself again.
That's not even its full attention. It's distracted or something.
John shot an uncomfortable glance at Rachel.
And we don't know what it is.
He shrugged and looked around, frowning.
And I think Rach is right. The Watcher isn't the only thing trying to eavesdrop on us.
Nate smiled a bit tentatively. I always try to act like what I do will be on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow.
The what?
Rachel gave him a strange, puzzled look, then shook her head.
Here, just a moment.
She motioned to Nate to sit down, then slid cross-legged onto the bed, while John grabbed the room's other chair and pulled it in close to Nate's, drawing the three of them into a tight circle. The two were closer to Nate than he'd expected, but he sat still and raised his eyebrows at her questioningly. Rachel gave John a sidelong glance, and they both closed their eyes. Almost instantly, a dim gray glow seeped out of their bodies to envelop both of them, then radiated out into the room, coalescing slowly into a globe that encircled all three. After a minute or two, the bubble had formed and sharpened until it was as solid as a soap bubble, and their eyes opened. Nate stared at the bubble, wide-eyed. Both were breathing hard, as if they'd been running.
"Wish Dad was here,"
Rachel said.
"He had a knack for that sort of jiggering, and Neflick is hard."
John nodded, his expression drawn, then shook his head and turned to Nate.
"Look, you don't have to trust us, but you need to know that Lorden isn't telling you everything. He's not totally honest."
Rachel nodded in return, then her lip curled ironically.
"The whole telestry is twisted, and he obviously knows you're the Bright Star, but he's playing his cards close."
Bright Star. Nate knew that word. But before he could respond, Rachel continued.
"He could be a snake as easy as a dove."
Nate smiled briefly. "Some trust is earned. Some is freely given. Just don't break it." He looked them both in the eye for a long moment as they visibly relaxed. Then he said, very evenly, "My memory is spotty." He drew in a deep breath, remembering the flash of knowledge that had transformed both him and his understanding of the world, but completely unable to recapture it. All he was left with was a sense of the importance of his task that drove him forward, comfort in knowing that he did have a role to play, and just a hint of darkness. He shook his head and continued. "It's spotty, but I know I was sent here, sent for a reason. You called me Bright Star. Will you follow me?" John's eyes opened wide in shock, and Rachel sat back, staring at Nate. Their surprise made their expressions almost comical, but Nate didn't smile. He simply waited, his face calm. After a moment, John and Rachel looked at each other. Rachel raised an eyebrow at her brother, and he gave her a tiny smile. A moment later, they both turned back to Nate and nodded. He smiled at them in return and nodded back. John said quietly,
"Dad should have seen this."
Nate frowned thoughtfully, then nodded again once and asked, "I don't suppose you know what's going on." Rachel shook her head and barked a short laugh.
"We don't know anything. I wasn't exaggerating when I said we were stuck in our crystal for 1,000 years. It was actually closer to 1,200. For the first few centuries, Dad would come talk to us about what was going on. But after that..."
She rolled her eyes.
"The telestry put on some really seriously twisted ceremonies every couple of years over the past century or two. But mostly, it was just waiting. We couldn't even close our eyes. We should have gone mad. I think I would have if John and I didn't have a connection that let us communicate."
Rachel shook her head again, her gaze pulling inward as she went silent. John nodded and added,
"It wasn't exactly telepathy, but we weren't alone either."
Rachel nodded as well, still caught by her memories.
"The dreams of Earth were awful."
John laid a hand on her arm, then grinned, obviously trying to pull her back into the present.
"Can't say I'm sorry to be alone in my head again, Rach."
He paused, then added more soberly,
"I'm still having dreams, though."
She nodded wryly, then looked at Nate for a moment before she asked,
"Why now? Over 1,000 years and you show up now? What Dad said, he never thought it could take so long.
Nate looked at the sphere surrounding them with a grave expression. There are powers here that aren't friendly to us, like the Watcher. Your bubble is great, but there are too many questions I can't answer, even if I remembered. Some things I know, others... He shook his head. Rachel smiled wryly.
We can't keep the Watcher out.
She paused and her eyes went past Nate to the framed symbol on the wall behind him. Then she added,
I'm glad you're here, though.
John nodded emphatic agreement, and Nate smiled crookedly in return. I'm glad to find friends here waiting for me. Rachel was staring past them as if in thought, one hand on her neck running across the scaly pattern that wrapped her throat. After a moment, Nate asked hesitantly, What is that? Rachel blinked in surprise and rolled up her sleeve to show more of the strange design, which did extend down almost to her wrist.
You mean this?
Nate nodded and Rachel shrugged.
It's the Rec Immacula. Dad gave it to us. It helps keep us safe from entropic shock. All the Telestics have it, too. Go ahead and touch it if you want.
But what is it? Nate reached out a finger to touch the pattern where her skin looked almost as if it had been turned into tiny bits of glass. The pattern was smooth to the touch, with no sharp edges or protrusions. John, too, had rolled up his sleeve, and now that he was looking closely, Nate could see that John's Rec Immacula, in a green so dark it was nearly black, was slightly different from Rachel's, which was just as dark, but blue. The strangeness of the smooth, multicolored design pricked Nate, and he shook his head in wonder. It was John who answered the question.
Some kind of crystal. Dad said it was just a side effect. But it's part of our skin now. Its purpose is, like Rachel said, to keep us from using so much Energemetris 6 by accident that we go into entropic shock.
Rachel was still staring at something on the wall, and Nate noticed that it was the same framed symbol he'd been looking at earlier. John followed their gaze as well. He seemed about to speak, but past him, Nate saw the hatch start to open. He still couldn't hear anything outside the bubble, but the head that immediately appeared through the opening was Keevan's. Keevan scanned the room for a moment. Then, upon spotting the bubble, he winced visibly. The beckoning motion he made with one hand was somewhat fearful, and his eyes darted to either side impatiently. Nate pointed at Keevan with his chin. Looks like we have company. We should probably see what he wants. John and Rachel both glanced over their shoulders, then shared an annoyed look. A moment later, the bubble lost cohesion and rapidly dissipated into the air like smoke in a breeze. Keevan grimaced as the three rose to their feet, and he beckoned to Nate again.
I've been trying to call you. Master Loredan wants to talk to you. The Keeper found us.
Nate turned his head. For John and Rachel alone to see, he mouthed, Keeper? Rachel's eyes were wide, and she made a shooing motion toward Keevan, who rolled his eyes as he closed the hatch and withdrew.
It has to be Terran, but he's got to be dead.
Rachel shook her head. Nate stared without comprehension until John broke in.
We knew him before he got trapped. He was like a little brother.
He shook his head, wonderingly.
How could he have found us so fast, and what does he want? It's been so long.
Nate frowned and spoke slowly as certainty seeped out of the unreachable pool of memory in the back of his mind and solidified before him. You said his name is Terran? I don't know what he wants, but we need to see him. As they stepped out of Nate's cabin, he once again had the distinctive feeling that something or someone was watching him. He shivered as the three started forward, following Keevan's lead through the maze of corridors that ended on the ship's primary bridge. As they passed through the hatch to the bridge, Kievan disappeared down a side passage without a backward glance. And that concludes chapter 2. Hang on just a second. We will be right back. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And we're back, and I wanted to just say, anybody who's listening to this later on, you should join us when we're live. In the next few weeks, I'm hoping that after we get done with the chapter reading, if anybody's in chat, we can take a few minutes to talk to, you know, whoever's watching us and, you know, get to know people a little bit. Yeah, it absolutely would. And so I'm hoping to do that after we finish the reading. And eventually, you know, if things go as I'd like, I'd love to shut off YouTube and any other. We're on several different venues. We've got Instagram, we've got YouTube, we've got X, and we've got Rumble. And I'd love to shut off Instagram and YouTube and just go to X and Rumble and just talk to subscribers, talk to, you know, people who are interested in having a word with us after the show's done. So if you're listening later, come join us during the live show. If you're listening live, I'm not ready for it this week, but hopefully next week I will have everything set up so that we can, you know, talk to people and see if anybody's around. That'd be wonderful.
Awesome.
Thanks for being here, Mel. I sure appreciate it. And thank you, Oldest. And thank you, everybody else, for being here, and we will catch you next time.
All right. Have a good week.